All right, so, and I want to thank you for inviting me to come and share my strength, hope, and experience. Every time I do this, I do a script for so for 33 years. Mm-hmm. I'm always so nervous that I will, you know, have a brain blip and not remember what I wanted to say. I make a script, usually read one page, and then the rest goes by the wayside. But every time I do that, it is a wonderful opportunity for me to look at the blessings in my basket as a result of, you know, walking this path. There was a reading in the July 20th for today. These are my pictures. And I have to say, one of the things I'm grateful for today is I qualified someplace else recently and I couldn't find the ugly picture. And my sponsor said, could you please bring a picture? So I found the second ugliest picture. And I said a prayer and could not find those pictures. And I said, please, God, can you send them back? Because I don't ever want to look like that again. I'm not about to go around again. And the other day, I said another prayer and said, St. Anthony, could you please wake up? Because it's making me crazy that I can't find these dumb pictures. And sure enough, I went in the bag that had the bracelets, and there were the pictures. So that was, you know, a silly little thing like that used to cause me to eat. And today, we just kind of breathe in and out and try and put one foot in front of the other. But this is what July 20th said about growth. Nature is no spendthrift, but takes the shortest way to her ends. Growth is a phenomenon in nature. I can't push it, shape it, make it happen. I can only do the footwork, endure the pain, and know that the results are not up to me. There's struggle in the growth process. Pride, ego, and misused will stand in the way and must be overcome gradually with understanding and compassion. Pain is always the teacher, but with each period of growth, it becomes less acute. Growth is the opposite of control. Another term for it is learning to let go and let God. And that is a subject I can only expect to get better at, not master. And that's been a consistent message for me. When I came in 1981, this was the last house on the block for me. I had been a fat kid, a fat adolescent. For some periods of my life, I could get thin. And then when the applause stopped, I'd go right back up the scale, and I had 75-pound swings, you know? And I can remember one time when I was in my 20s, I went into a gym and looked in the mirror and I said, how did that happen again? How did this happen to you again? When I had been down to the lowest weight in my life. And I was a nervous eater, you know? The way that I coped with feelings was to put something in my mouth, and it was a learned pattern. It started in childhood. There was, you know, a lot of unhappiness in the home. And kids don't really have any language. Most of the time I just tried to, you know, become wallpaper and not really attract attention to myself. And I was left a lot at my grandmother's house. My grandmother was a lovely woman, but pretty worn out after having 14 kids by the time the grandchild came along. But she was very good to me, and there was no fighting there. When I went home, there was a lot of unhappiness. And, you know, sometimes kids feel responsible for that. And the way I dealt with everything was to eat. And it soon became a learned response, the way I dealt with everything. In 1974, I got married and moved to New Jersey. And in 81, I had a kid that was sick with a chronic health problem that kept me, you know, whenever this thing started, she went on for weeks and weeks and weeks. And I decided I was going to cure my house with health food this and whatever that. And I gained 30 pounds and I was completely disgusted. I said, I don't know what to do. I have so many books from the Weigh and Pay things. It won't even be worth it to go and pay my 14 bucks again. So my mother had been to my house. My mother, who we had an adversarial relationship all my life, had been to my house the year before and said she refused a dessert. And I said, are you on a diet? I never saw her do that before. She says, I'm on the OA. I said, what is that? She says, I go to meetings on Morris Park. And I called, and nobody answered the phone. And then a year later, when I had the gift of desperation, a person answered the phone and said, yeah, there's a meeting at St. Cecilia's. And off I went all by myself. I didn't care. It was like the one light for me. And there was a girl who qualified at the front of the room. She was just gorgeous. And during the course of her share, she said she lost 200 pounds. And she helped a lot of people in this program. I don't know where she is today, but I still am in touch with people that are still here that were sponsored by her. She's a lovely woman. So when the meeting ended, I tracked on that woman and said, how do you do this? She said, sweetheart, you get a sponsor and you get a big book. And she pointed out to me this girl that had just been stepped up, just 6 weeks ahead of me. And I would have stood on my head in the corner and spit nickels if she had said, that's the way to do it. They gave me this little pamphlet called The Dignity of Choice. It was like a trifold thing. You picked one from there if you didn't have one for yourself. And you called her every day. And that's what I did. And it took me 2 weeks to get up the guts to say, I'm hungry between meals. And she said, can you read your big book? So that was the first time I ever picked up the big book. And I thought, doesn't make much sense to me. But after that, she went on vacation, and I had the opportunity to call her sponsor, like talking to the professor. And I said, you know, I tried to read this big book, and I find it hard. And she says, can you go to a big book meeting? Nope, can't go to a big book meeting. I have two small kids at home. My husband works, blah, blah, blah. She said, just a suggestion. And then a little while down the road, I went to a big book meeting. And that's when the big book began to come alive for me. There was somebody at that meeting. She was a double winner. And she looked at that sentence on page 36 that says where the guy went to... He went to the bar, he had a couple of sandwiches, and as long as he had the sandwiches and the milk, he felt it was okay to take a drink. And that was the beginning of another trip around the world. And the sentences there in there was, I vaguely sensed that my thinking wasn't any too smart. I can tell you that many times over the last 33 years, that sentence has gone through my head. I was vaguely aware that my thinking wasn't any too smart. It's not a big rush. It's not an aha. It's just something is not right. Something is not right. And sometimes I take the opportunity to take a step back and make a phone call, say a prayer. I was string bean perfect in my abstinence the first 6 years, and then I started to have trouble with my food, and I picked the strongest woman I could find. In fact, there's a story in the big book. When they made the fourth edition, I was a little annoyed. I read the third edition for how many years? 20 years. And they took out this one story about this girl, this heavy girl in funny clothes. And the first time I read that story, my heart tracked on it. It was just like, yeah, that's you, the big girl in the funny clothes. At any rate, but they have put more contemporary stories in the newer version of the big book. And this is one of my favorites. It's called Flooded with Feelings. This is kind of describes what it was like for me to have an eating problem and not understand it. From time to time, I would tell the truth. I said in a meeting that I was afraid to get a sponsor because I was afraid he might ask me to do something. I left that meeting with a phone number. I called it, and sure enough, my new sponsor started leading me through the steps using the big book. I called him every day. I told him that I just didn't want to be an alcoholic. He said it didn't matter what I wanted. The question I had to answer for myself was whether I was or I wasn't. He even suggested that I could try a little controlled drinking if I wasn't sure. I knew I had never been able to do that. I didn't have to do any more research. All I really had to do was review the drinking I had already done. I remember telling a friend years ago that I didn't have a drinking problem, I had a stopping problem. We laughed, it was true. But there was something else going on, something that never occurred to me until I came to AA. I just didn't have a stopping problem. I had a starting problem, too. No matter how often I stopped or for how long, I always started drinking again. And that was true for me before I came here. There are some things I haven't put in my mouth for 33 years, one day at a time, and I just trusted that sponsor that if, you know, I followed my food plan, that I would have some success. And I realized over time that when I put those substances in my mouth, like it says in the doctor's opinion, it took me 6 years before a sponsor pointed me towards the doctor opinion. I didn't even know it existed in the book. But now that's one of the first things my sponsees read because it makes such sense. There's not only, it's like some kind of somatic, emotional, spiritual response that I had to this whatever lied on a plate. And over when I worked with this sponsor, she pushed me through the 12 steps, and I tried to bargain with her. I said, you know, if I do that fourth step at Christmas, I'm going to be depressed. And she said to me, you deserve the way you're going to feel after you finish. And I take people 1 to 12. It was up to me. There was no judgment. I just had to decide. I was going to continue with the work, but because her job was to get people 1 to 12. And I thought, there's nobody like her. I guess we'll hang on for the ride. And I did my first fourth step. And you know, there was a lot of resistance that came up for me. And I had small babies at the time, and I had a little timer, and I would set it for 10 minutes and put it by the kitchen table, and I'd say, okay, I'm gonna sit here for 10 minutes, and if I'm not done, if I don't write anything at the end of 10 minutes, I'm released. And you know, I picked up that pen, and that resistance disappeared. I don't know where it went. Maybe it was my ego fighting to keep everything as it was. And it was quite something for me to tell her some of the things I was ashamed of. I remember quaking in my boots many times, and when we got to the last of the last, she said, is that all? And I thought, okay, so it didn't impress her. Whatever it was, it didn't impress her. And I went on to make my amends, which was another opportunity for me to debate. I said to her, you know, I'm not going to, I can't reach out to these people. They're going to think I'm a crackpot. And she said, it doesn't matter what they did. I said, well, some of them, you know, were equally as unpleasant. It matters what you did. And, you know, my spirit knew that. So when I mailed the letters or when I made the phone call, inevitably I felt like something fell off my shoulders. And if I ever saw those people again, I would be able to have a conversation. And I did not feel that way beforehand. And so, you know, there is a wonderful discussion in our step 8 and 9 about, you know, learning to forgive people. I think it's one of the most important things for me. Sometimes I have to forgive myself first, that I'm not hip, slick, and cool, that gravity has taken over some parts of my body, that I don't know the answers, that I didn't see whatever it's coming. Sometimes I say, okay, all right. God loves me and accepts me just the way I am today. That's all I need to know. And if this happened, God knew about it too. So looking back over my shoulder, there are many things, some of the most beautiful days in my life and some of the most difficult days of my life happened after I came in here. And the most difficult days, I turned to the steps. And, you know, sometimes it's not only me and an ethereal God. Sometimes I really have a presence, a feeling of wholeness. But when big trouble happens, I need somebody with skin on that I can talk to about this. And I generally call some of the people that have been close to me in the program. And they know more about me than my family. I can talk to them on a different level than my cousins. And that is a gift you can't write a check for. I learned about my character defects. You know, it says, there is a wonderful writer he was a great teacher of the 12 steps. And he, when he begins his description of step two, he says, sanity is the ability to see the truth. So when I read this a couple of years ago, I thought, wouldn't that be easier, you know, for me? I had a lot of resistance to that word. God could, came to believe that God could restore me to sanity. I thought, I'm not insane. I know a lot of insane people, but I'm not that way. But the way I acted towards food was not sane, whole, or healthful. So now, when I'm in one of those places, I say, okay, God, can you help me to see the truth here? And I do believe, I do believe. I think over the 33 years, I've had about three spiritual experiences where I felt like I was protected. And then the next day you get up, you have to go to the supermarket, you have to go buy stamps. But having felt those things, I know that nobody can ever tell me there isn't a power outside myself that wants good for me. I can convince somebody else, but if somebody else is having trouble, I mention to them, as people, as somebody said to me one time, well, if you don't believe, you can believe in my belief. So, and on the handout, I gave you the step four resentment prayer. This I got from a step study that was conducted by another fellowship. Anybody working the 12 steps could come, but you had to be in their fellowship to share. This says, God, this person is perhaps a spiritually blocked person, whether they are or not. This resentment is blocking me spiritually. Help me to show this person the same tolerance, compassion, patience that I would cheerfully grant a sick friend. Please forgive me for being angry and enable me to stop clinging to this resentment. Please remove this resentment and show me how to take a kindly and tolerant view of this person. Please show me how I can help, be helpful to them. Thy will be done. There was one time I was doing a fourth step, and the two people that I had on this list, I just was grinding about them. And the instruction was, write the names, just write the names the first week. Then say the prayer for them for a week. And then you continue on with the rest of the four columns. And after a week, I was able to write out the rest of the four columns. And when I got to the fourth column, what was my part? I was able to see what my part was, because something had shifted. I had put down perhaps my rights and was able to take a more balanced view of the thing. And the first resentment disappeared. The second one, I'm only 50% part of a relationship. But it was softer than it had been before. I take an opportunity to pray every day. And on the front part, you're going to see the third step prayer. I've been saying that prayer for 33 years. Sometimes I say it gripping the steering wheel. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. The last 6 months, I've been taking it apart. And phrase by phrase, and this is what I wrote one morning, and I do this every morning because I'm involved with elder care right now. I need to do it every morning. God, I offer myself to thee. And then that morning said, I'm kind of stiff in my body this morning. Please help me to join the day softly, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Help me to see whatever situations or people that come my way are here to help me to learn. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Help me to have a generous heart so I can better do thy will, so that I can help someone else or do some good. Take away my difficulties. Sometimes I name them, or sometimes I say whatever feels hard today, that victory over them may be a witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. That when situations work out, I can share with others that the program taught me how to have a better response and gave me some skills to live. I didn't have any skills when I came in here. I still wanted to be wallpaper. I put away the chairs and took the ashtrays off the table. But this program has helped me to grow a soul. And what's important to me today is to be the most loving person I can be. So if there is a resentment, I feel like my heart has ice around it. And I don't want to live that way. And so it's an easy thing for me to say the resentment prayer. And we don't forgive to be good. We don't forgive, you know, because we're nice. We forgive to be whole. And it's one of the greatest benefits I have from working this program. And my time is up. So thank you for listening. I appreciate your attention.